The field of artificial intelligence, or AI, attempted to build intelligent systems on the basis of more familiar rule-based operations and symbolism. Its best successes were probably expert systems and case-based reasoning. Lesser known is computational intelligence, or CI, which arose at the same time as AI, but in relative obscurity to the public, even to the present day. Many, if not most, researchers in CI now use the AI label, possibly because it is better recognized, but also due to the trend to hybridize approaches. In general, one cannot just program computational intelligence toolsets. They must learn and evolve by training over datasets, albeit sometimes augmented with knowledge or algorithms. There are three broad areas of CI: neural networks, evolutionary computation, and fuzzy systems. In artificial neural network structures, each neuron or node is a non-linear processing element. Most often used are simple sigmoidal or hyperbolic tangent functions with weighted inputs. The classic feed-forward multi-layer perceptron is shown on the left, while a fully connected recurrent network is shown on the right. Recurrent networks are excellent for sequencing, but are often very challenging to train. Genetic algorithms are a common form of evolutionary computation. Here, the system of interest is described by DNA-like coding. Individuals of better fit are selected from a randomly initiated diverse population. They're subjected to mutation and crossover to evolve the next generation. Fuzzy systems describe systems in terms of fuzzy rules and sets that are modified by learning to reach a solution. It is relatively easy to incorporate expert knowledge in these systems.
Her head and cries in my shirt. She must be hurt very badly.
The expression big data obviously relates to the challenges of handling and analyzing massive amounts of information on a timely basis. Of course, the definition of big and that of data change year by year, such as the massive amount of image and video data now being processed. In this section, I'll provide examples of how computational intelligence tools have been used for big data. Note that the next section, deep learning, is a special and important case of one tool set for tackling big data. Before we discuss the German power grid, it's important to take a simple look at neural networks and advanced control theory. A basic approach is reinforcement learning, taken from animal studies and psychology. Perhaps the most advanced approach is known as approximate dynamic programming, or ADP. The Hamilton-Jacobi-Bellman equation is a starting basis for ADP. Here is a simple illustration of an actor-critic architecture for ADP. As can be seen, the actor learns how the system and environment behave, as well as learning how to control actions affecting their behaviors. The critic learns how to improve the control policies that guide the actor. The ADP does not always require extensive and detailed engineering models to control a very complex system. This is a huge advantage. Robust, adaptive, and optimal control are three very large branches of control theory that are unified by ADP as developed for neural networks. Frank Lewis's group at the University of Texas at Arlington has also shown how the separately developed terminology in mathematics of these three branches is also unified by ADP, and hopefully this will help to bring the three communities together. There are several approaches to ADP control structures, depending on how the actor and critic are interrelated and whether derivatives of the value function J or V are used or not. More recently, hierarchies of critics have been implemented.
And it seems that you can.
Germany is phasing out its nuclear plants in favor of wind and solar energy backed up by coal power. The government's transition to these green energy technologies is a challenge to its electric grids because wide fluctuations of wind and solar power can potentially cause blackouts, weakening voltage, and damage to industrial equipment. It is also problematic to control power flows to and from Germany's neighbors. In the period leading up to 2011, German power companies had to intervene in the country's network more than 1,000 times each year to keep the grid stable, although one comment in 2013 suggested this was every other day. A 2014 Siemens study reveals that the renewable sources of energy could be made much more efficient in Europe if wind turbines and solar powers panels were set up at optimal locations. This could produce savings of up to 45 billion euros. However, such a sustainable power supply would not only require stable grids, but smart transmission systems as well. From the illustration above, we can see that artificial neural networks are pervasive throughout Siemens' business beyond the electric power grid itself, including sensors, quality assurance, engineering control and diagnostics, supplier and customer markets, clinical, and environmental. But there's another important message. As Hans-Georg Zimmermann of Siemens has pointed out, even though artificial neural networks are a key tool for improving the solutions for tough, complex problems, they're components of much larger systems and must fit into each context. Even if you obtain considerable engineering and business improvements through the use of neural networks, to most managers and engineers, they are mysterious black boxes, and it is a big job to train old dogs to do new tricks. One challenge is to show that neural networks are safe to use in terms of personnel and facilities, and safe as well in terms of business risks. Of the three main branches of computational intelligence, many engineers may be more familiar with applications of fuzzy systems than with either neural networks or evolutionary computation. That is because fuzzy systems are more intuitive and express a problem in terms of rules that can be easily based on expert knowledge. Additionally, the results of fuzzy analysis tend to be more clear and self-explaining. Applying analysis across the range of major American sociological problems, with an emphasis on intelligence as a key factor, the book The Bell Curve by Richard Herrnstein and Charles Murray elicited a storm of controversy and criticism. Criticism targeted their analysis of race and intelligence, a taboo subject that they knew would get them into trouble, but without which they felt their analysis would be incomplete and lacking in courage and honesty. In this image, the results of Herrnstein and Murray for black males are compared to conventional logistic regression and to Charles Ragan's fuzzy sets approach. While all the analysis show the importance of intelligence, Herrnstein and Murray had it as the most important variable, whereas the other two analyses add factors and shift the emphasis. Only the fuzzy sets approach attempts to put combinations of variables into context, although it refrains from quantifying results for this example. In the early 1900s, Vilfredo Pareto studied income distributions for a variety of countries spanning almost 600 years. His work got him into trouble, but it was picked up several decades later by the late Benoit Mandelbrot, a French mathematician who is famous for fractional order dimensions, or fractals. It appears that income distribution is not markedly influenced by the socioeconomic structure of the community, nor by the definition chosen for income. If Pareto and Mandelbrot are correct, then do we need to challenge the key sociological questions themselves, such as wealth distributions, and not just the techniques being used in the results. As shown by the hysterical reactions to the bell curve and to Pareto's observations, there's a crying need for impartial, unemotional analysis that is not blinded by small data sets, confirmational bias, selective filtering, and political allegiances. If the tool sets are widely and cheaply available, agnostic big data may yield less bias and more powerful analysis than the experts can. Management, customers, and the public could then partially or entirely bypass interfering experts' theories and models and thereby question their conclusions or ignore them entirely. The concept of deep learning has been around at least since the early 1960s when Ukrainian scientist Ivan Enkov developed the general concept, but not for neural networks. By 1981, Kihunio Fukushima of Japan was getting surprising results with his Neocognitron, which is a convolutional neural network. By 1991, Jürgen Schmidhuber's group had applied long short-term memory, or LSTM, to achieve deep learning with recurrent neural networks. I won't go into any details on the architectures and training, but I will mention that very deep neural networks develop abstract, meta-level representations that are not at all understood today. So they can solve very challenging problems, but they are quite difficult to understand. Work is being done to address that problem. Driverless cars require a large, complex tool set, most of which is not based on computational intelligence. The best example I've seen is a German project in the mid-1980s which successfully controlled a car on the Autobahn without any AI or CI. It was largely forgotten over the years, but when pointed out in the 2000s, may have resulted in the delay or cancellation of a major US program.
All right.
This non-affiliated amateur has produced an excellent video showing the performance and glitches of driverless cars, so I'll just let it play during coverage of this theme. I will concentrate on deep learning vision, which to me is the real enabler of driverless cars. Large, publicly available databases are key to the open development of computing concepts and the comparison of different approaches. Here is an example of the range of images included in the German traffic sign detection benchmark, which obviously covers a wide range of visibility conditions and contexts. Deep learning is the technology of choice for vision. Notice the ranking of results provided in a July 2016 paper, where some systems outrank human performance. This doesn't even consider the reality that humans are often texting, daydreaming, or even falling asleep, whereas the machines are 24/7 alert for limitless distances. On the other hand, note that the text database is composed of still images rather than video, which isn't quite the same challenge. Finally, I'm sure that you are all aware that global automakers are scrambling to build their own driverless cars, as we can see from this selection of announcements over the last year. The importance of games is often underappreciated as they can be key drivers of advances in our understanding of intelligence, as well as being a great test of the capabilities and performance of AI and CI.
In
1997, at New York City, IBM's Deep Blue supercomputer beat reigning world chess champion Garry Kasparov. Deep Blue was based on classical AI expert system-like technology. Even a decade or two later, Kasparov still didn't believe that he had been beaten by Deep Blue alone, instead suspecting that the team of grandmasters were involved directly. Surprisingly, the public and statements surrounding the Deep Blue-Kasparov chess match actually infuriated some researchers, who saw Deep Blue as being dumb classical AI with little long-term potential. One such researcher, David Fogel, started by building a checkers playing system that was only given the mini-max principle and the rules of checkers, consisting of a surprisingly simple neural network double-wrapped with evolutionary computation. Blondie 24 learned and evolved entirely by itself to become an expert-level checkers player. Later, Fogel's team also did the same with chess. According to some, the Chinese game of Go is to chess as chess is to tic-tac-toe. In March 2016, 30 years after IBM Deep Blue's success in chess, Google's deep learning AlphaGo program beat Lee Sedol in a five-game match, the first time a computer Go program has beaten a 9-dan professional without handicaps. In cheating theory and game theory, as well developed as it could be for these games, could improvements ultimately lead to highly competitive and collaborative systems that take advantage of the strengths and weaknesses of humans in general, and individuals and organizations in specific, to develop tailored approaches to winner-take-all and win-win challenges? Natural language processing capabilities for text are still central to social media and search engines. Deep learning has recently enabled entirely new automated capabilities, not just for text, but for speech, sound, and translation. Social networking experiences are becoming increasingly centered around photos and videos, and it is extremely difficult to extract information from visual content. Because of this, image and video recognition are two of the more exciting disciplines being worked on in the field of AI and deep learning. The game-changing nature of deep learning quickly led to a flurry of hiring of top researchers and acquisitions of companies, led by search engine and social media companies. Google started the gold rush for deep learning talent on the 1st of March 2013 by hiring part-time Jeffrey Hinton of the University of Toronto. Hinton is credited with kicking off the deep learning renaissance by using arrays of special vector processors for gradient descent solutions. The search for talent is ongoing as more and more research organizations and companies put a priority on deep learning. Google's acquisition of DeepMind Technologies on January 26, 2014 was, in my view, especially strategic. This is a company that included graduates of Jürgen Schmidhuber, who used much more advanced, long-standing, and powerful recurrent neural networks for deep learning. When the marketing industry becomes excited about a technology, then you know it's having an impact. Thanks to deep learning, social media has the potential to become far more personalized. New marketing fields are quickly emerging too. Audience clustering, predictive marketing, and sophisticated brand sentiment analysis. The deep learning frenzy is ongoing, drawing in many, many more researchers and corporations. Furthermore, There are many open source and proprietary tool sets coming out to further accelerate development and adoption of deep learning. This is extremely important, as most research groups and corporations simply don't have the scientific, management, or financial resources to do the advanced research and commercialization to stay in the game. Look to this area to become the genesis of a huge consulting industry spreading throughout the economy. After taking a very quick look at big data and deep learning, several safety-related examples are given in this section. I don't have a textbook guide for how computational intelligence approaches will be used in safety, but I can raise a number of questions in terms of the current state of the technologies. The young lover's dance. I reached out to touch your hair, but I was watching from a distance. Let's take a look at capabilities for understanding and processing information in the form of verbal and written communications. For something out of the ordinary, rather than drawing examples from deep learning, I will instead use Robert Heck Nielsen's confabulation theory for cognition in mammals. Cognition is the process of how decisions are made based on available information. This includes sensory information such as vision and speech recognition. Based on confabulation theory, a simple system was trained on 120 million sentences and 70 million sentence pairs from quality newspapers and magazines. As a test, the confabulation system is presented with two consecutive sentences that it has never seen before, and it must generate a third plausible sentence to follow. The confabulation system is listed alongside five human responders selected from an informal survey that I did. Can you tell which of the responders from 1 to 6 is the confabulation system? Less than 1 in 10 people could, even with a series of hints. This result surprised and impressed me, and there are many more examples like it. Moreover, without having any pre-programmed capability for semantics, ontologies, spelling, or grammar, it actually appears to outperform some adults in these areas, as well as showing a current awareness that probably beats many. A second example is a vision of a capability for the future rather than the results of an experiment. They may not be that far-fetched. Ghostwriter is a system that would take specifications from a user, perhaps the document length, outline, and goal, to provide a first draft of a document. The user would then interact with the confabulation system, providing questions and directions to refine the document, with much of the actual writing and research being done by the system. The result would often contain information and concepts that the user was not even aware of at the time he or she started the composition. Of course, general capabilities like these are not specific to safety. They will be developed for high-value customers and applications to begin with, but once available and cheap, my guess is that this will be of significant value to safety. On January 27, 1967, tragedy struck the Apollo 1 mission when a ash fire occurred in the command module during a routine launch pad test. Three astronauts died in this accident. But what really caused the incident? A lack of imagination by all involved. There are many conventional techniques to promote creativity and insight, and researchers are studying a thirst for knowledge. It must also be pointed out that evolutionary computation is highly creative, under some conditions, more so than people. But my sense is that we have a long way to go before CI creativity and imagination can be applied alone to safety analysis in an effective and practical sense. On April 13, 1970, 5.5 minutes after liftoff, Apollo 13 astronauts felt a little vibration. At 55 hours, 55 minutes into the mission and 200,000 miles from Earth, oxygen tank number 2 blew up, causing the number 1 tank to also fail. After implementation of an ingenious series of measures, the astronauts were returned safely to Earth. The cause of the incident was traced back to 1965, 5 years before the mission. The command module had undergone many improvements that include raising the permissible voltage to the heaters in the oxygen tanks from 28 to 65 volts. Unfortunately, the thermostatic switches on these heaters weren't modified to suit the change. I'm not sure how much more value CI has to offer to standard change management techniques, perhaps other than as a backup to flag missing actions. The Space Shuttle Challenger disaster occurred on January 28, 1986, when it broke apart 73 seconds into its flight, leading to the deaths of its 7 crew members. Findings showed multiple contributors to the accident, with many indications having occurred in previous space shuttle flights. Best known is the O-ring problem. Of 21 launches with ambient temperatures of 61 degrees Fahrenheit or greater, only 4 showed signs of O-ring thermal distress, i.e. erosion or blow-by in soot. Each of the launches below 61 degrees Fahrenheit resulted in 1 or more O-rings showing signs of thermal distress. Lesser known is that the diameters of the 2 solid rocket motor segments had grown as a result of prior use, leading to significant out-of-round conditions between the 2 segments.
Obviously a major malfunction.
Again, classical maintenance analysis should be sufficient to bring up this situation. Perhaps because the situation was being closely followed and hadn't become a problem, had everybody become blind to the developing problem? Could CI approaches help to keep critical trends in view so that they can be addressed? Or is that not any different than what NASA already had in place? It's very important to know that computational intelligence techniques pose their own inherent safety risks. It is easiest to consider CI systems which are trained and evolved, after which the parameters of the system are fixed. However, that's not always what we want. As an example, here's the interesting case of a wooden, scaled-down version of a hypersonic aircraft designed for Mach 5 to 15 flight. But they tend to fly like rocks at speeds that are low enough to permit landing or approach. The mock-up in the video uses neural network ADP to achieve, or almost achieve, stability. Once a satisfactory level of performance is obtained, safety analysis is then dealing with a defined system. But it still faces the challenge of ensuring that it will perform safely over a wide range of conditions in perhaps new and changing environments. The aircraft, robot, car, or process itself may be changing with wear and tear or unfamiliar operating regime. But at times, the very reason that you choose CI is precisely because it does have the potential to learn and evolve in real time as the plant or environment pose new conditions or as agents appear that cannot be anticipated during system development. A fair portion of my own time in recent years has been spent on detailed peer reviews of papers that present new theories for the stability of neural networks. As one example, memristors are the fourth missing electrical circuit element following resistors, capacitors, inductors. Progress is being made with the mathematical theories of stability, but from my own viewpoint, it is not an easy challenge, and in many cases, the current theories don't scale very well. As a last fun example, I would like to turn our focus to the nature of human beings. As we all know, with automotive safety, the most problematic and risky component is the nut behind the wheel. Can CI do something for the nut? Perhaps. Already there is widespread use of cochlear implants for hearing loss, and retinal prostheses are under development for some conditions of blindness. Sensory systems have the advantage that at least we know basically what they are doing. The hippocampus is a jalapeno-shaped part of the inner brain and is involved, among other things, in navigation and the conversion of short-term memory to long-term memory. Ted Berger's group at the University of Southern California has been working towards a hippocampal prosthesis since 1988. Their approach is to build a system that can predict input-output neuron signal relations for hippocampal regions responsible for memory conversion from short to long term. Experiments have been carried out with mice and humans. Just take a moment to look at these two graphs of output prediction provided by Berger's group. Moreover, just 2 weeks ago, a startup named Kernel came out of stealth mode and revealed its ambitious mission: to develop a ready-for-the-clinic brain prosthetic to help people with memory problems. The broad target market includes people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, as well as those who have suffered a stroke or traumatic brain injury. Although Berger's project seems impossible, I suspect there may be a stealth advantage in the sense that some projects involving sensory and motor inputs and outputs seem to benefit from what I call the properties of anti-engineering and anti-Murphy's Law. This is where no one really understands much of even the basic levels of the brain systems that they are working with, and yet projects still succeed. Perhaps this is like ADP, where full engineering description of systems is unnecessary. The ADP neural network learns both how the system behaves and how to control it, in spite of our lack of full understanding of the results. It seems that one can, to some degree, simply provide a powerful and flexible platform that has a minimum set of capabilities, and the brain, whether animal or human, does the rest. By the way, what part of your brain do you need fixed? For me, it's currently the bad habits mess, but there are indications that I may need a hippocampal prosthesis for memory someday soon. About the loneliness that's mine, I wonder how much going have you gotten? I wonder about your friends that are not. I hope that this presentation has given you a feeling for how big data and deep learning are making an impact today, and what might be some of the opportunities and challenges in the area of safety. I'll let you take your time looking at this slide of my random scattered thoughts. Perhaps that will help to stimulate discussions and provoke your own questions. Thank you.